Good morning, 738 News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. Joining us every Tuesday at this time, we have Escambia Sheriff Chip Simmons. Sheriff, welcome back to the show, sir.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
Hey, I am doing great. It's always good to talk to you. We had anything happen over the weekend that we don't already know about? Now we have a couple of things to follow up from last week, but anything over the weekend? I heard there was a fight, a break-in, a gun, something or other. What happened here?
Yeah, we got a call to an armed disturbance at a business, which is on West Michigan Avenue. It's Pitbull Paradise is the name of the business. They have an apartment above the business. And when the owners came back, they discovered a guy by the name of Dustin Clements was burglarizing the apartment above their business. So they confronted him, and during that confrontation and tussle, he pulled a gun out, and it was reported to us that he pulled the trigger, but the gun malfunctioned or misfired, and then they were able to wrestle with the gun. When we get there, there's still a wrestling match going on. We ended up charging Dustin Clements with aggravated assault, but we're looking at additional attempted homicide charges because he, in my mind, he pulled a gun, he pulled the trigger, and he intended to shoot and kill somebody. So we charged him, though, with, at this point, battery, aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, armed burglary, possession of drug paraphernalia, concealed weapon violations, and then he had a violation of injunction for domestic violence by refusing to surrender the firearms and ammunition that he had. So basically, owners walk in on a burglary in their own property, a fight ensues, guy tries to kill them or attempts to kill them, and we end up charging with all those charges.
Wow. Wow. And so I missed it in your list, but attempted murder wasn't in your list. Can you charge somebody with attempted murder if they pull the trigger and the gun doesn't go off? It would seem like the answer there would be yes, but you're the expert. You tell me.
Yeah, they're initially charging with aggravated assault. We want to do some follow-up investigations. We want to know if did he know that there was a malfunctioning round in the gun? Did he know that he intended to kill the individuals that were there? But I talked to my investigators yesterday. We're certainly looking at that, and we're working with the state attorney's office on whether we should charge him with attempted homicide. The thought was he wasn't going to get out of jail anytime soon.
Yeah.
And so they would charge him what they knew would be consistent with what they had at the time, but we certainly intend to look at the attempted homicide charges if the state attorney's office will prosecute it.
That makes sense. And of course, if he knew the gun malfunctioned or he knew it was a dummy round or something, why pull the trigger? Like, what's the point of that too? So, but yeah, no, I'd be curious to see how all that turns out. We also had it was big in the news over the last week or so that you had an Escambia County teacher who was wanted for child abuse in regards to this incident where I guess she was fighting with him or something, and then he flipped her desk over, all allegedly. But he was found, turned himself in, right?
Yeah, he turned himself in. We had an elementary school teacher and a 7-year-old student. The only way I can explain it, get into an altercation. He called her up and then asked her, and again, all this stuff is what was reported to us, but he asked her why she was bad. She didn't know. She says she didn't know. And then he called her name. She slapped him. Then she went back to her desk. He gets up from his desk, picks up her chair, and dumps her onto the floor, causing her to hit her head.
Hmm.
We looked to talk to the teacher. He was less than forthcoming with us. We couldn't find him. And as I understand, he left the school at the time and hadn't returned to the school either. So, there's a lot of conversation about whether, students are bad and whether teachers are bad and all this sort of thing. But I think those people may be losing sight of the fact that this is a grown man and this is a 7-year-old, little girl. And, there's some discipline, school discipline that could have been taken on the girl, but you do not need to battery a 7-year-old child.
Yeah, that's not really within the policies and procedures under any circumstances. I understand that. It does raise a question for me, though. I assume, and pardon me if I'm wrong about this, but I assume that there were no cameras in the classrooms. And as far as I know, there aren't generally security cameras in our classrooms. I know you're a big believer in the value of body cams for the cops because it helps to, avoid misbehavior on both sides. It also seems like having cameras in the classroom would be a tremendous security help in the "we hope it never happens" case of an active shooter on a campus. would having cameras in the classroom be useful from a law enforcement perspective?
I think obviously having a video footage of what took place would have certainly helped us. We had to talk to, obviously, the victim, 7-year-old child, and we talked to at least 7 other students that witnessed the event, and we had to get their input or their statements. So having a video of what took place would certainly be beneficial. That's obviously a question for the school district. I'm not sure about their rules and their policies on that. I know that obviously there are cameras throughout a school. I don't get into exactly where those security cameras are for obvious reasons, but
right.
there are videos, cameras on school buses as well. So again, would a video help us in this investigation? I think the answer is clearly yes.
Very good. We're talking to Chip Simmons, Sheriff for Escambia County. Sheriff, something that's kind of become a news story over the last several days is these apparently very large parties going on at Lexington Terrace, and I know you guys are aware of this. It's kind of a weird situation, though, because I guess you don't really need a permit to have a group at the park, but maybe they charge money for people to get in. I'm not 100% sure on the details here, but can you maybe tell us what's happening and what you guys are trying to do about it?
Yeah, over the last month or so, a group of what I call organizers, but some people have gotten together and said, hey, meet us at Lexington Terrace Park. They did not obtain a permit, but technically to go to a park, you don't need a permit. The permit is for the pavilion or the enclosed area. But what has happened is this gathering has gotten so big that there are some complaints from the neighboring residences. And that is the loud music, the content of the music, that they just the sheer crowds. So we've been dealing with them. We only became aware of it about, 10 days ago. I talked to the organizers and I explained to them that the park closes at dark and that we expect them to be gone at dark. The issue is that there are food trucks and vendors that are showing up, and that's not necessarily something that we regulate. I do think that that's what's causing a lot of the people to get there. So we're going to start to clamp down a little bit on it. I had a meeting yesterday with some of the residences, and as I mentioned before, last week I met with the organizers, and there's a fine line between how much is too much and I think that they meant well in the beginning. I just think that the situation, the crowds have became bigger and bigger, and now it's an issue where we're gonna probably need to get involved with the vehicles. They're blocking roadways because all the cars can't get inside. The park's not big enough to accommodate the size that this party has gotten to. And
how big is it? I mean, like, how many people are we talking about?
There was an estimate last Sunday of up to 1,000 people.
Oh my God!
They have a bit of a makeshift car show. They have, again, food trucks show up there, and something's got to give. I think to have a food truck, you're going to need a permit. And we've been working with Escambia County Parks and Recreation, and they've been very willing to work with us and try to find a solution. So that they can have these gatherings, but they don't violate the rules of the park, and they don't violate the peace and tranquility of the neighborhoods. In these types of situations, I'll always side with the neighborhoods. I mean, I would hate to live in a park where you can't get any rest or relaxation because of the noise that's coming on all hours of the night. In this case, though, we've already stopped them from gathering at dusk. And that's something that we're going to continue to work with.
Very good. Yeah, wow, 1,000 people. That's a little more than you would think as an informal gathering at Lexington Terrace. Hang on to me for just a second, Sheriff. We're talking to Sheriff Chip Simmons from Escambia County. We've got Reese's out for the rest of the morning. We've got Jenna is... Sheriff, you had a good opportunity over the weekend. You got to join the folks on stage and just celebrate Fred Levin, who finally got a street named after him, right?
Yeah, it was a great day. The weather's been nice. So Sunday morning, afternoon, there was a great event downtown. I was honored to be a part of it. A lot of people that knew Fred Levin, including myself, and knew of all the good that he did here in Pensacola. There were some conversations about some of the people that, over the years that may not have been fans of Fred Levin, but that's part of his, that's part of his thing. He embraced that, and he loved talking about the people that didn't agree with him as much as the people that did. And I think that's what makes Fred Levin so enduring. But his family was there. A number of other people were there. Again, I like to to go down there, and I was able to talk to some of the people that knew him from the olden days, you know, and even before my time. So it was just a great event, and I think a very deserving thing for one of Pensacola's most iconic figures, Fred Levin.
Absolutely. Fred Levin. Absolutely. Hey, just last quick thing, because I don't mean to take a lot of time on it, but I just wanted to quickly ask you, because the president came out with this big announcement about ghost guns, guns that are purchased without going through the normal background check, don't have serial numbers, all of that kind of stuff, and then are hard to trace if they wind up in connection with a crime. Is that a problem that we've experienced in Escambia County, to your knowledge?
No, to my knowledge, we haven't had any concerns where our investigators have come to me and said, you know, we weren't able to track this weapon or that weapon because it's a ghost gun or didn't have a serial number. I'm not aware of a single case where that has happened. It's something that we're aware of, and obviously we work with ATF and we work with other agencies to try to track weapons that are involved in crime. So that's beneficial to us. Do I wish that they would have serial numbers? Probably, but has it been an issue here in Escambia County? I'm not aware of a single case where we've taken issue with it.
All right, well, that's helpful. That's what I wanted to know. That's why I asked. Very good. Chip Simmons, he is the Escambia County Sheriff. Sheriff, as always, thank you for the time. Thanks for helping our community be safer, and we look forward to talking to you again next week.
You bet. Y'all take care.